You're listening to the next phase of Cybersecurity Podcast. With this series, you can stay up to date with all the latest information and trends in the cybersecurity space by hearing from today's leading analysts, end users, and vendors so that you can be prepared for all scenarios to help protect your business.
Hello and welcome to the next phase of Cybersecurity Podcast and EM360 production. My name is Max Curtin, Head of Content here at EM360, and I'm your host on today's podcast. Now, in today's episode, I'm being joined by Neelu Howe, who's the Chair of the Board of Directors, and Lyndon Brown, Chief Strategy Officer at Pondurance. In this episode, we're going to be expanding upon our first conversation with Pondurance on the growing shifts from MSSPs to MDRs, and we're discussing the rise of large cyber attacks and how current cybersecurity tools and solutions are helping organizations to fight back. So welcome to both of you, and welcome to Lyndon for returning to the show here. If I could get a little bit of background before we delve into the questions. So Neelu, if I could start with you, please.
Sure, Max, thank you so much for inviting me on this podcast. Really looking forward to the conversation. I've been an investor, executive, entrepreneur, board member in the technology industry for over three decades now, just to date myself, with a focus on cybersecurity for the past 15 years or so. Today, I work on cybersecurity issues across a variety of sectors through policy, by working through think tanks with great companies like Pondurance, and as a member of board of directors of both technology companies and public companies.
Excellent stuff. Thank you so much. And Lyndon, if you wouldn't mind just refreshing our listeners' memory and maybe a bit of background on Pondurance as well.
Great, Max. Well, great. Excited to be on here again. Thanks for having me back. So my career has really been focused on helping organizations really solve their biggest cybersecurity challenges. So starting out by working in the DoD and intelligence community and working on the challenges there, but then moving into the private sector and helping both medium and large enterprises secure their environments. So that means building companies that prevent, detect, and help organizations respond to threats. And at Pondurance, we're really redefining managed security services to help businesses get much better value out of those relationships. So specifically, Pondurance delivers managed detection and response services to a variety of industries that are really facing pressing cybersecurity challenges, including ransomware and other complex compliance challenges that we often hear about in the news. So we do this by combining an advanced platform with highly trained and elite analysts to help customers really focus on what matters most for them.
Excellent stuff. Well, I'm very excited to have you both on the show, and we've got a great conversation to kick off. So let's start here by delving into this. So Neelu, I'm going to ask you first, because we need to kind of address the elephant in the cybersecurity room, if it were, because 2020, 2021 has really shown us that we're up against both a health and cyber pandemic, and we've seen a sharp increase in large cyber attacks. Obviously talking about the SolarWinds hack, the Microsoft Exchange server exploit, Colonial Pipeline, and the Babook ransomware attack. So the big question to open up is, what's going on in today's threat landscape?
Thanks, Max. That's a great question. And believe me, anyone who is still needing a wake-up call, I think certainly got one over the past 9 months with all the events that have taken place. There's a couple of things that this past year has made clear. First, it's that the theft of defense secrets, the theft of personally identifiable information, the theft of intellectual property is a key feature of strategic competition in cyberspace, especially by focus adversaries like China and Russia. And they're interested in that information that, you know, thousands of companies across the world own. That's what SolarWinds and Microsoft Exchange server exploits were all about. They were sophisticated espionage campaigns by Russia and China targeting private sector companies to further their global ambitions. So everyone's a target from that perspective. Second, cybercrime's become a hugely profitable industry filled with criminal gangs that operate with impunity in jurisdictions that openly harbor them. And with cryptocurrency, these gangs are, you know, they're able to now really easily monetize their criminal activity. Huge payments in a way that just wasn't possible before crypto. So as a result, what we're seeing is that ransomware attacks are rising exponentially, and so are the extortion demands that go with them. And no organization is too big or too small to be targeted. And the incident costs, the recovery costs are also rising as a result. And these attacks, while they may have a specific purpose, they can also have unintended consequences, which is what we saw with Colonial, right? The intent was never to take down, you know, the East Coast. It was really to get money. And the unintended consequence was Colonial shutting down their systems, which had dire consequences here in the United States. And keep in mind that between cyber insurance and tax loss write-offs, companies have little incentive not to pay ransomware demands. So as long as there's no disincentive to pay, as long as countries like Russia allow these gangs to operate with no repercussions, and we have no ability to criminally go after them, we can just expect this activity to continue and to grow. And finally, you know, a key takeaway from the past 9 months is that malicious cyber actors have been able to adjust their tradecraft, their tools, their techniques, their procedures, and they're taking advantage of vulnerabilities that exist in our systems, and especially at the entanglements caused by the systems. And sadly, they're shielded by an ossified regulatory legal structure that we have in the United States that can't keep pace with the reality of cyberspace. So many laws and regulations that were written that control the agencies that are tasked with going after these criminals were written in the 1980s before there really even was a cyberspace. And we're just not moving fast enough to adjust. So putting it simply, threat landscape continues to expand as we layer complexity into our digital ecosystem. And as we attach more and more things to the internet, our adversaries are getting more sophisticated and they're embracing innovations like cryptocurrency, and they're moving faster than us to exploit the gaps, and we're too slow to close them.
100% agree. It is a shocking and scary landscape out there, and listeners, for everything that Nilu has just listed there, we would have to do multiple upon multiple of podcasts to cover all of it, because it is that much going on at the moment. So we will do our best to kind of cover all of this. And I find it interesting what you're saying there about the attacks. And especially if we take those major three, we're talking about SolarWinds, Colonial, and Babook, of kind of the most sophisticated government-targeted cyber attacks in US history, really. And Nilu, obviously, as you were mentioning in your answer there, you've also spoken extensively on US government state surveillance. So how much power does the body have over cyber attacks? And is their new civilian cybersecurity reserve legislation enough to address the growing cybersecurity vulnerabilities and breaches faced by the US government?
You know, let me just start by saying this is a really important and it's a complex question. The first thing I want to say is that the government agencies that are tasked with protecting us in cyberspace, whether that's CISA, FBI, NSA, the men and women in these organizations are working incredibly hard and, as authorities allow, in cooperation with each other whenever they can to protect the country, to protect the people from nation state adversaries and criminals. And I just really want to make sure that we give credit to the amazing people who are working at these agencies tirelessly against those who are trying to do us harm. Now, what I would say is, you know, there's three issues that I just raised that we have in terms of how we're addressing and how we're empowering agencies. The first is that our laws and regulations are out of date. And it, like you said, this is a very, very complicated problem. And it's not a voting issue, right? So to get our politicians to really focus on having a whole of society response of updating the laws and regulations is not particularly easy in this environment. Now, we have amazing people right now at the helm of these agencies, right? You have General Nakasone at NSA. You've got Chris Inglis, who's now the National Cyber Director. You have Jen Easterly at CISA. You have Anne Neuberger on the National Security Council. So we have amazing people who understand this complexity working on it. But today, where we sit, our adversaries are using our laws and regulations against us. For example, our intelligence agencies can't run surveillance operations on U.S. infrastructure. They're prevented from doing that. NSA cannot surveil U.S. infrastructure. And so where are adversaries launching their operations from? U.S. infrastructure. They're using that regulation against us. And by the way, I'm not suggesting that we allow NSA to run surveillance operations. I'm just saying we've got a blind spot that we absolutely have to shine a light on. the warrant process that the FBI has to use to pursue criminals in cyberspace is completely outdated. They can move faster, they can use virtual private servers, and you just can't track them using the current warrant process. We have to understand the reality of cyberspace and understand that we have to become as agile as our adversaries are in order to keep pace with them. The third issue, of course, is there's a massive talent shortage across the industry in government with cyber incident responders. And I will tell you, IR folks in our industry are burnt out. They've been working 24/7, especially for the last 12 months. And we have to come up with new innovative ways of bringing talent into the industry, using talent that maybe has stepped away for one reason or another, right? 30% of women stepped back during the pandemic from their jobs. And a lot of them are amazing cyber experts. And then you, of course, have retired folks who might be willing to come back and serve their communities. The legislation that's in place is a really, really good start. It still relies on working for the government. And I think we have to be broader than that. We've got to be able to bring in people who can't get cleared for whatever reason or don't want to go through a clearance process. But it's absolutely a step in the right direction. And, you know, going back to this complexity issue, there's no silver bullet, right? It's going to be 100 different things we have to do simultaneously to make a dent in the issue. And this is a step in the right direction. We need to do more faster.
Definitely. And it's so interesting with that approach, because you're 100% right. Everyone needs to understand what people are going up against. And sometimes it does feel like one arm or even both arms tied behind your back in a boxing match sometimes when going up against these kind of threats. And as much as we can put stuff in place, and as you say, skill shortages is another huge issue that we're kind of facing, the bad actors can adapt as well, and they can adapt very quickly to kind of get the attacks in that they kind of need. And that's where we can kind of see such a hard issue in that battle back. And you're 100% right to mention all the hard work that people are doing within the industry to combat these threats that are coming in, coming up with great tools and resources in order to fight back and combat these cyber attacks. Obviously, for people who know, our firewalls, our malware scanners, our network traffic analyzers, just to name a few there. But why are they still happening so frequently, even though we are doing our best to kind of invest in new tech, bring in new tools, but it still doesn't seem to be enough?
It's a really great point there. I mean, look, people are working, really talented people are working incredibly hard. There's been a lot of innovation in the cybersecurity industry. This year we're going to have a record year in terms of investment dollars coming into the industry. Typically, we have $5 to $7 billion of venture capital coming in. This year, we're probably going to have close to $20 billion of investment coming into the cybersecurity industry. And yet here we are, we still have tens of thousands of organizations getting breached and ransomware increasing. And what all these intrusions underscore is the fact that no matter how sophisticated the defenses are, no matter how vigilant we are in training and educating, human error from conventional software development processes, coding vulnerabilities, not properly maintaining and updating our systems, always leaves the door open for committed adversaries. And everything we do is increasingly IP enabled, right? And the security of our systems and networks is inversely proportional to the number of nodes we have, the number of users we have, the number of applications we support. And it's just getting more and more complex. So it's getting harder and harder for the defenders. I'll tell you a personal example. You know, today's modern car is a data center on wheels, and it has more than 100 million lines of software code, which is four times what a fighter jet has. And which is what's led me to get a 69 Pontiac Firebird, because I'm just tired of my car needing software upgrades. I want to pop the hood and be able to fix it myself. But complexity is the enemy of safety and security. And what you saw with Colonial is that, you know, your security is only as good as your weakest links. And the criminals were able to use an account that wasn't being used, that had no multi-factor authentication, a single compromised password through a VPN. And so we've been saying this for a long time. When you're on defense, you got to be right every time to keep the adversaries out. And they only need to be right once to get in. Now, it doesn't mean you give up, right? Again, no silver bullets. You got to have a multi-pronged approach. every company needs to understand now that they have a target on their back and they've got to get baseline security in place. The private sector absolutely has to up its approach to security and adopt that best practices. And anyone that doesn't have multi-factor authentication in place needs to understand that they are absolutely vulnerable. The government has to do its part. It has to start holding countries that harbor criminal gangs accountable for that behavior. We need to, you know, I'm kind of a lone voice in this, but we need to regulate the mechanisms that enable this activity. If we don't regulate cryptocurrency, and by the way, I'm not talking about eliminating cryptocurrency, we're not going to change the incentive structure that's in place. And we've got to obviously solve our talent shortage problem to do it the right way. It's a whole of society response, and every individual has responsibility here, right? We humans have a flawed operating system, and our forced upgrades don't happen fast enough. And we need to understand that we can be the weak link and need to understand how that works. And so it's not just about protecting data, it's about protecting our people and teaching them. So those are just, you know, off the top of my head. But again, we live in a complex, interconnected world, and we've got to acknowledge that and just up our game all around.
Definitely. And this is why I love doing podcasts like this, where we can have this conversation and say, as you say, it's a societal thing. It's not just a one person responsibility. And for all the CISOs out there listening, or anyone in charge of the cyber division within the company, and you're seeing just a mountain of wall coming up after what we've talked about, you're not alone, but you need to bring the company in. You need to tell the people what needs to be done, because education is one of the best lines of defense, that I always say, to getting people to understand what's going on. And just having a solution chucked at a problem isn't always going to be the best way. You need to understand where these faults are and keep checking it regularly as you kind of go through from that perspective. And Lyndon, I want to kind of bring you in here, because let's talk about, obviously, Microsoft. It's just one enterprise to recently kind of be hit by a wave of data breaches and exploits. And, you know, attackers aren't discriminating. As many small to mid companies have also faced a raft of cyber attacks. It's a blanket across all organizations, as Nilo was saying there. So from your experience, Lyndon, what are some of the biggest, most common cybersecurity pain points for modern businesses today?
Yeah, Max. No, I think very great conversation and discussion. I think there are a lot of systemic aspects of cyber that create the challenge or influence the challenge that many organizations are facing. I think as we think about the overall problem, there's a lot of asymmetry that exists, right? So we know that a dollar of offense fundamentally beats a dollar of defense. And honestly, a dollar of offense, likely beats $1,000 of defense, right? As that scales up. So although we're seeing a lot of investment in security programs, agencies, and also security companies, trends such as digitization, there are simply more lines of code being written than ever before. The average enterprise or the average medium-sized business is using more applications than ever before. And because of the accelerated digitization from the pandemic and other drivers, we've seen organizations simply have to really accelerate the dissolving of their perimeter and seeing things in the cloud and seeing organizations and employees move around pretty universally. So all these things are really stressing the already strained ability of businesses to actually get their hands around the cybersecurity problem, their assets, their infrastructure, et cetera. As Nilo was mentioning, there's really everyone is effectively becoming a target. And I think there are strategic targets that many of these adversaries go after. And there are also targets of opportunity, right? There's a vulnerability that's available. So why not gain access and potentially use that as a leverage point to further your more advanced campaigns if you are a threat actor? So as a result, really no target is off limits, whether you are the ultimate end target or you are simply a stepping stone to be able to gain access to another organization. So that's where really supply chain comes into play. We're also seeing attackers become more brazen, right? Doing things that are putting them on the front page, going after kind of the big ransoms, the big campaigns in a way that, you know, historically they would maybe try to stay in the shadows a little bit more. And now it's not uncommon for us to actually know a lot about the adversary groups and how they're evolving in their infrastructure, et cetera. But it doesn't seem to be materially slowing them down in terms of how aggressive they are being. So as a result, even ransomware specifically, this is something that's hit many organizations directly and has impacted many organizations and people with regard to their lifestyles, the way they work, and what they have to be concerned about. So obviously some of the high profile attacks, Colonial Pipeline, we've seen local government agencies, police departments, we've seen even food supply organizations get impacted, transportation such as the subway, et cetera. So the attack landscape is definitely drastically increasing. And the average business simply doesn't have the threat intelligence, doesn't have the personnel, the human capital to apply to the problem of keeping attackers out, but also dealing with attackers once they gain access, ensuring that there's a quick response. So there's definitely the talent shortage, which we talked about. There's also elements of new regulations, new requirements just to stay compliant and to operate in the businesses that they operate, whether it's in the financial services sector, healthcare, et cetera. A lot of the trends because of technology shifts are really reducing the visibility that the average head of IT, CISO, or even the CEO can have in terms of where their assets are, where their data is. What am I even protecting? And where does it lie? So in short, if you think about a maturity model, where to the right is having everything really buttoned up and having a really handle on information, data, the risk, and then having a program that maps to it, it's a lot of organizations simply are to the very far to the left of that, trying and hoping and wanting to mature their program and move to the right, but simply not being able to overcome a lot of the challenges that are on the path to that nirvana.
Yeah, I think that maturity model example is a perfect example of what we're talking about here and how that can kind of come into play. And I'm curious from that angle, Dan, obviously we've spoken about bringing in new tech and how that can kind of evolve the situation. But Lyndon, last time that we spoke on the podcast, we explored the SIM versus MDR versus XDR debate. But how do these info security solutions fare and compare at this current time with the scale of attacks that we've been speaking about? Which approach is the most effective and beneficial for businesses right now from your perspective?
Yeah. And I think, you know, as we think about the dilemma of the average CIO, CISO, et cetera, is that there's always a new thing, right? There's always a new attack vector, a new potential way to detect it. So we do see companies sprouting up. We see categories sprouting up. So just even keeping a handle on that is always, you know, a conversation we like to have with organizations to really help them have a way to understand the landscape and what their options are. Now, I think as we think about some of the options you just mentioned there, XDR, SIM, MDR, et cetera, there's these two big broad buckets, which are products, and then there are services. So starting on a product side, if we look at the SIM category, the first SIM, I think, hit the streets in the late 90s. If we look at the history of SIM, what we would find is that most SIM deployments were unsuccessful in the context of what the organization was hoping to get out of that investment and the outcomes, et cetera. So if we think about why that is, a lot of the issues that we just touched on, Max, are responsible for that, right? Not having the personnel to actually get the most out of that investment, tune it, configure it, not necessarily maybe having defined use cases or having the process maturity, et cetera, to really get the most out of it. So a lot of technology, whether it's SIM, next-gen firewall, and XDR, which is a quote-unquote newer category, the history shows that when security technologies are purchased, the vast majority of them go underutilized, underconfigured, and as a result, underperform. The second big bucket is managed security services, where MSSPs have really dominated, right? MSSPs popped up kind of at the in the early days of the internet, where the organizations, the ISPs that were providing connections to the internet, you know, there's an old adage that the invention of the ship was the invention of the shipwreck, and it was kind of the same thing, right? The internet got created, and then all of a sudden you started having cyber attacks and things that simply didn't exist before there was really a vehicle for those to happen on. So ISPs got into the MSSP market to basically start to protect the kind of the internet gateways that now that they had created. But the biggest challenge with the MSSP space historically and it still exists today is that MSSPs were really focused on addressing the device management problem. Here's a next-gen firewall. Let me help you manage it. And have never had the threat intelligence, the detection and response capability, maturity, the threat hunting maturity, et cetera, to be able to actually do a materially better job at addressing the changing threat landscape and the changing needs in today's market. So the MDR space specifically popped up and was in about a decade or so ago with the goals of solving that. But of course, over the years, the needs have evolved as well. So what we do at Pundurance is really help organizations gain access to very elite talent that has experience detecting, responding to threats, and providing 360-degree visibility, where many MDR vendors in the space simply provide a small percentage of visibility in terms of overall infrastructure, provide no blocking or response capabilities, and also struggle to help organizations really understand what matters and what it means in the context of their business.
A great history there that I think really covers a lot of what we've kind of been saying and how that kind of approach can be better for businesses and what we're kind of seeing going forward. And that leads me nicely onto my next question, because I'm kind of curious, as we've been mentioning throughout, we can't plug every hole. We can't have eyes on every single thing that's going on, as much as we would all like for that to be the case. So what key factors do organizations of all sizes, from SMBs to enterprises, really need to consider in order to mitigate and mainly prepare for cyber attacks?
Yeah, I think the big thing is really the recognition that this is about people, process, and technology, right? It's not just about kind of the flashy kind of press release product that comes out and it's like, making a lot of promises. Nothing in this context to really be successful without having the process and people maturity to wrap around that technology, to really get the most out of it, and to really extend and expand on what it can actually do. The way I look at it, I tend to kind of bucket things, right? I kind of see there as two potentially different problems, but two problems, right? Some organizations have no security alerts, and that's a problem. And then 41% of organizations are seeing more than 10,000 alerts a day, right? Different problem, but also a problem, right? Like, how do you actually deal with the noise on one side? And how do you actually identify or even find signal in the first example? But people, process, technology working together, having the expertise to actually be able to apply the threat intelligence, to apply advanced analytics, to threat hunt, to ask the right questions. Also having the process consistency to be able to deliver outcomes such as detecting, responding, or recommendations and improving the security program, falling in the process bucket. And then, of course, having the technology aspect constantly evolving, innovating, and increasing in effectiveness to be able to keep up and deal with the dynamic threat environment that we're seeing out there.
Excellent. I think that's very key for a lot of organizations to take forward and really address and look at. And just before we wrap up here for today's show, it's been a fantastic speaking to both of you, and I wish we could have another hour or two just to delve into all of this a little bit further. But I'm curious, and please both of you weigh in on this, and Nilo, I'll start with you. How is Pundurance helping their clients to navigate this tough cybersecurity space? Do you guys have any case study examples that really ties together everything we've been speaking about today?
This is a question we love answering, and I'll start off and ask Lyndon to jump in. So to sort of square the circle on everything we've been talking about today, we're in this together. We all have to work hand in hand to defend against today's sophisticated threats, sophisticated threat actors. And that's our mission at Pundurance. We're in it together. We work with our customers to defend not just the data, as I said, but the entire human experience, the people in these organizations. We work on the whole of society response by delivering on public-private partnerships. We've worked with federal law enforcement agencies on very high-profile takedowns and wargaming. And we feed the whole ecosystem, the cybersecurity ecosystem, by sharing, like many companies and organizations like us do, information when we detect unknown threats. So we embrace our opportunity and our obligation in today's cybersecurity marketplace. we understand that this is a journey for every organization and for every CISOs, and like all journeys, you know, it's not always going to be smooth, but what they should know is that Ponderance will be there at every step of the journey, not just with technology, but with people, and that we extend that mission to our partners in the ecosystem. In terms of specific case studies, and by the way, Lyndon, would love to get your take on this as well, how you would describe Ponderance's mission and then to provide the case studies.
Sure. Yeah, I think, you know, when we talk to customers and we talk to organizations out there, what we find is that they're really looking for, they recognize that while there are commonalities across businesses, they have unique, may have some unique challenges, right? Unique business processes, potentially combinations of regulations that they're subjected to. I was talking to an organization yesterday, and they have, PCI requirements, combination of GDPR requirements, and some additional, NYDFS requirements as well, right? So I think, as we talk to customers, they tell us they're really looking for really that personalized experience, not that cookie cutter approach. They're looking for proactive security, and they're looking for that around the clock security, right? One of our customers, Steve Long from Hancock Health, was actually on 60 Minutes a couple weeks back, and just talking about really how they had a really tough situation with ransomware, and how Ponderance was able to come in and help them address that issue, move forward, and build a program that is definitely strong and reflective of the organization's goals of being security conscious and implementing that across the board. So when we think about Ponderance and how we work with customers, there's a number of things that we do that we find customers love and other organizations in the market are simply not providing, right? So the first thing we recognize is that many organizations have already invested in some sort of technology, and giving the customer the choice of being able to leverage that technology in the context of a managed service is something that customers really, really gravitate towards. Also the policy aspect, being able to fit within their policies, what they prioritize, what they find important, is another big aspect. As we think about use cases and really cloud adoption being a major driver and a major trend, many organizations either being kind of both feet in the cloud, one foot in the cloud, or some combination across the board, being able to work with customers along that journey, supporting and integrating with their controls and their infrastructure, really regardless of whether it's in the cloud, on-prem, et cetera. And really customized reporting that fit within the business, detection strategies, et cetera. The one thing, I'll say, and I'll finish on this piece, is that we are fundamentally in the detecting threats and responding to threats business. And what really has, really been a testament to our team, our hardworking SOC, threat intelligence analyst, incident response team, is just simply how frequently we're credited with being the first to uncover a threat, to uncover a new variant. So we've gotten some notable coverage with some of the new ransomware variants that we've been able to detect, warn the industry about, and so organizations can protect their businesses, in addition to some things that we've discovered around hackers leveraging very common vulnerabilities in exchange servers, et cetera. So in short, we want to ensure that organizations, regardless of size, are able to appropriately protect themselves from, but also respond to cyber attacks. It's really excited to see when customers validate that we are delivering on that mission, and super excited about the future ahead as well.
Excellent stuff. It's exciting to see what you guys are doing out there. And there's so much work that you guys are putting in, which is really fantastic to see, which do help with the problems that we've all been discussing today. So Neelu, Lyndon, thank you both so much for coming on and sharing your insights. It's been a fantastic conversation with you both today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Max, Tech, Neelu. I had a great time. Thanks.
And thank you for everyone who took the time to listen to this episode. We do hope you took a lot away. I know we gave you a lot of information, but if you are looking to kind of dig down into this a little bit further and learn more information, then there's the best resource that you can head on over to is Ponderance.com. They've got fantastic resources on there. You can request a demo. They can help with when you're experiencing a breach. So please head on over to Ponderance.com for further information.